Welcome back, everyone. I'm Shannon Laird, and you're listening to BME Radio. Today on the phone with us, we have Kat. Everyone knows about the fairly stylized full-body concept transformations like Eric Sprague and the Enigma have undertaken. Kat, on the other hand, in my opinion, has taken it a big step farther, and instead of stylizing his transformation, has been literally turning himself into a cat through a series of surgeries. Kat, let me ask you, when did you first realize that you were more feline than Homo sapien?
Actually, about when I was around 10, when I was named Cat.
Really? Who named you Cat?
Medicine man of my tribe, Gray Cloud. My given name is actually Stalking Cat.
Really? So you were almost brought up with this destiny in mind?
Yeah, but it took some time for me to actually realize it myself, more so than just somebody who actually knew me better than I did.
Mm-hmm. And were you raised inside the tribe? What was that? What was growing up like?
Well, being half Indian and half white is pretty rough, because you fight with the Indians because you're half white, and you fight with the whites because you're half Indian. So it's kind of rough.
Mm-hmm. But your childhood was overall fairly normal. Were there events that sort of drew you towards this?
No, it's the cat's my totem, and as things go further and further down, it's more than just my totem. It's a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm. When did you first start getting tattooed? Not as a cat, but just in general?
Oh, let's see, about 25 years ago, something, 25, 30 years ago.
How old were you then?
Would have been like 18.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of tattoos were you getting, and in what sort of context? What was motivating the tattoos?
Originally started out being mostly aquatic, because I have a very strong connection to the water people, the porpoises, and that aquatic connection.
Mm-hmm. So they were always animal tattoos?
Yeah.
And when did you first start doing the cat ones?
Oh, let's see, probably 25 years ago.
And were those on your face, or were they in other places as well?
Let's see. I started the cat actually on my face, and that was about 22 years ago, 25 years ago, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And how did your life change the day that the day you first started putting those on your face?
Actually, I got more in touch with my totem and who I really am.
Mm-hmm. For someone who hasn't been brought up with the sort of Native American understanding of what that means, what is that exactly?
Well, the cat is my totem, which is my protector, my strength, my power, and also my animal instinct, my way of looking at things. I see things as a cat would see things.
Right. And now you have some cats as well?
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's a 18-pounder sitting on my chest right now.
Do you see that as, is it a pet cat or a friend cat, or what sort of relationship do you have with your cats?
He's actually one of my kids. You know, he's, my contact with them is very close, and I feel what they feel. They're not pets. They're part of the family. You know, they're not here because I keep them. They're here because they want to be here, and it's a coexistence.
Mm-hmm. How many of them did you say you had?
I only have two. That's all I have room for. If I had room for more, I'd have more.
And how did you decide on those particular cats, or did they decide on you?
Both these guys were throwaway cats that nobody else wanted, which is not the way I choose a cat. I normally will go to somebody who has a litter of cats and let them choose me. But both these guys, one female and one male, have been excellent cats.
Mm-hmm. And are cats the only pet that you have had, or have you had other animals as well?
Oh, I've had reptiles, wolves, snakes, birds, fish. I've had all different kinds of animals.
Mm-hmm.
So horses. God, I've had just about all of it.
Mm-hmm. So you certainly don't have a stereotypical fear of dogs or anything like that.
Oh, not at all. In fact, I've got a pretty close connection with wolves, too, but they're not my medicine, so there's some kind of conflict there, but it's not a problem. I get along well with all animals.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've lived, you said, for 25 years with people starting to perceive you as a cat. How do you think things would be different for you if you'd never gone down that path?
Well, actually, for some time, they were different, and a lot of it was a matter of having difficulty getting balanced with who and what I am. In fact, I spent a lot of time drinking and drugging, trying to kind of deny the empathy that I felt for various people and different animals and various connections. And what it really was is I was denying who and what I am and trying to subdue that with drugs and alcohol, and just trying to deny that that was a case. And not until I really started living the cat, the animal that I am, the medicine that is part of me, did I start getting comfortable with who I am.
Mm-hmm. So this transformation was an essential part of keeping you healthy.
Yes.
And it's probably essential as well in your relationships with other people and the rest of the world as well.
Yeah, it certainly causes problems with some people, but a lot of people have problems with dealing with who they are as well. And the thing is that I don't try to hide who and what I am. It's I'm the cat, and the more I become the cat, the more comfortable I become with it.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to play a song. This is some music from the Star Maiden soundtrack, which is German sci-fi series, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Kat a little bit more about his own transformations and some of the transformations that other sort of animal people have undertaken.
Wohin fliehen wir, Akam? Du nimmst jetzt die Koordinaten und peilst den Planeten dort an. Die Erde. Wenn es stimmt, was ich gehört habe, haben dort nur Männer zu bestimmen. Oh, solch ein Planet müsste das Paradies sein.
Back with Kat. On the break, we were talking about some of the other people that have undergone similar transformations, and Kat was mentioning you've actually run across a cat society.
Yeah, there's a Native American group of cat people. It's a secret society, and there really isn't much known or discussed about them. But it goes back a very long way. This whole concept of animal totems and about becoming your totem is goes back before, predates history, predates written history, and some of it actually predates known history, except by people that are part of various small circles that are familiar with the history.
Mm-hmm. So there's just an oral tradition passing on information about the society?
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get to know the others in this group?
It's more they get to know you rather than you get to know them.
Mm-hmm. So they found you.
Yeah.
Now there are, like I said, there's a few other people who've undertaken these full transformations. The Leopard Man in Scotland, Enigma's wife Katzen in Texas. Most of them, though, have undertaken a much more, like I said, a more stylized transformation, almost like a cartoon version of the animal. Do you think there's a bit less validity to that type of transformation? Do you think they're taking it less seriously than they should?
Not necessarily, and a lot of that, too, could strictly be the interpretation of the person who's doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, when you start doing something like this, you're at the mercy of whoever's doing the work on you as more than actual direct input yourself.
Right, that's true. Now, your work, it's constrained, as far as the tattoos, they're constrained largely to facial? The rest of your body was already done at that point?
Yeah, and I'm going to probably do some work on that as I can find somebody to, if I can find some good way of removal to go solid cat.
Mm-hmm. So if you had to do it over again, is that one of the biggest changes you'd make, having started?
Yeah, like I say, I was going through a lot of changes when I first started this and hadn't really come to grips with the... I was trying to deny who I really was, the cat, and went through a lot of changes and a lot of emotional unrest with it. So now, if I can find a way to correct what I've done, it would be to go straight cat.
Mm-hmm. And your procedures are definitely not limited to tattooing. I think one of the first ones you had done other than the tattoos were silicone injections. Do you want to talk about how that was done and what the reasoning behind doing it was?
Well, again, it was to shape my face more like a cat, and it was silicone injections in the upper lip to make it more cat-like. And the guy who was doing it in Mexico disappeared. Now, it wasn't able to pursue it anymore, so the amount mm-hmm. of work that I got was very limited.
I think we should mention as well that if there are any sympathetic plastic surgeons or anyone that that knows someone that might be willing, Katzen is looking for someone to continue that work.
Well, or a source for the silicone. That's been very difficult to find anybody that has any kind of permanent injectable, either silicone, or I understand there's a new animal collagen out that is permanent,
mm-hmm.
but got no word on it, can't find anybody, any source for it.
Let me ask you what you think of the fact that the mainstream medical community, who could fairly easily facilitate this transformation for you, really isn't willing to take this type of transformation seriously.
Well, the thing is that it is, quote, mainstream medical, and entirely too many people, particularly in professional fields, particularly medical fields, mainstream is whatever is considered normal for 98% of the populace and screw everybody else. And the real bottom line is what it takes to make me happy is what it takes to make me happy and feel better about myself and be who I am. And I don't feel that anybody else has an opinion on what that is or should be.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, you're a happier, healthier person now than you were before you started this.
Oh, by far.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had a few other things done. The ear sculpting. You made several changes to your ears to make them more cat-like. What were they?
Well, it started out with just pointing them a little bit, and they didn't come out as pointed as what I was after. And so the next time around, there's some implants put in there to make them a little more pointed, which I still want to go further so they're more cat-like, since I can't have actual cat ears located. and relocation of the ear lobe to elongate the ear and more accentuate the pointed appearance.
Mm-hmm. How was the splitting or the pointing of the ear actually done?
I'm not certain. I couldn't actually watch that, but I'm pretty sure it was a matter of take a wedge out, triangular wedge out, and bring the pieces back together to form a pointed shape.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have some of the most radical teeth reshaping I've ever seen. Are those real, or do you pop them in and out?
No, they're dentures. My teeth were getting, from years of drinking and drugging, getting beyond the point of repair. Actually, they could have been repaired, but it would have been excess of my annual income,
mm-hmm.
and which I couldn't afford, so the only other way to fix it was to get dentures, and if I had to wear dentures, I'm going to wear the dentures I want to wear, so I found somebody who would do the cat teeth.
Mm-hmm. And they don't, are you wearing them right now?
Yeah, I wear them all the time.
And they don't seem to interfere with your speech or anything?
No, the only problem I'm having with my speech is from having my lip cleft,
mm-hmm.
and it affects my speech only a little bit.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you sounded like before, but your speech is quite coherent. How long are those teeth, actually?
Oh, let's see. Excess of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
The fangs.
And are you're able to close your mouth fully? And
They interdigitate very well. In fact, we spent a great deal of time. The dentist who did it is somebody I've known for some years, and back when I had good teeth, he refused to do the work on my perfectly good teeth,
mm-hmm.
To reshape them and sharpen them and all that. And so basically, like, getting done what I wanted to get done was pretty much out of the question. Again, it was a mainstream thing, and it's difficult to convince a dentist that, yeah, so I want my teeth screwed up. That's how I want them. And so he refused to do that. But I didn't know the guy well, and when it got to the point that my teeth were beyond help, it's like, okay, if I got to get them yanked out and I got to get dentures, this is what I want for dentures. And he has a lab in his office, and the person who runs the lab is his grandson, and so I was able to spend some time with both of them with pictures and models and working out the proper way to get the articulation and the interdigitation of the fangs so that they work the way they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it was probably fun for them as well. And
Yeah, in fact, Brian, the guy who did it, really enjoyed the challenge. It took him a while, mm-hmm. understandably, but because it's not normal kind of work.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that, you know, working with mainstream professionals, doing things like this, you know, getting to know them has a positive effect on that community?
Yeah, I think so. Well, part of the thing that made everything work so well there is some years ago I had a jewelry business going, a hobby-type business that I was using to generate money when I was unemployed. And so I'm very familiar with the lost wax and the modeling techniques, the polymers used for the monitor, the materials used in constructing the dentures. I'm familiar with all the operations, so I was able to tell him not just what I wanted, but how it should be done to get the final result. And I think that in itself was a big step in the right direction, because I impressed them into the fact that I'm, you know, not just somebody that wants something different done. It's I know what I'm doing. I got a degree in engineering. I'm an electronics engineer. I do this kind of stuff all the time. And that my motivation isn't just something I want to do on a whim.
Mm-hmm. I think people are always surprised. People in the mainstream are surprised at how intelligent and articulate, you know, some of the real far-out modified people are. Anyway, I'm going to play another song. This is from the new Ween album. This is Falling Out. And when we come back, I've got a few more modifications, like the lip sculpting that Kat just mentioned, that we're going to be talking about.
Falling out, each other. Two faces I could see as you shook my money tree. There's no more you and me, let it be. Falling out, it's the end, and I lose another friend. The cards are up, the chips are all cashed in. You won't see me again, don't consider me your friend.
Like Kat said, he had his lip redesigned by Steve Hayworth as well. Kat, what was the procedure and what was its motivation?
Well, my lip was cleft to look more like a separated cat's lip, and it is the one part that I was really concerned about getting together. Actually, in conjunction with some silicone pumped in my upper lip to enlarge it, but haven't found any source of any injectable material. In fact, the next part of the procedure is going to be to relocate the septum of my nose down to the apex of the cleft to elongate my nose and make it more cat-like.
Mm-hmm. And that relocating your nose is pretty incredible. It must have taken a little bit of convincing to get Steve to do a procedure like that.
To some extent, but the thing is, far better than most people, rather than just it's something that's different or to be different. He seems to have a better understanding of the reason why I'm doing this. I mean, I'm not doing this to look different or to like stand out from somebody else. This is something I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest part of the problem is the expense of it, which I'm not in the high income bracket by any means, and finding somebody who's willing to do it. And Steve has been very helpful in that respect because he has a better understanding of how important these things are to the people who get them done.
I think that's true. Most of the people who are doing these heavy facial work things are either in the tattoo industry or in the sideshow industry. I mean, would you ever work in either of those?
I don't know necessarily. A lot of it would be a matter of how much it paid and how much of an actual job it was. The area I work, I have pretty much control of what I do, and the people that I work for not only understand the Native American traditions, but I kind of got them over a barrel as far as I do a lot of stuff that they're not going to be able to get anybody else to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very good in the microtronics field and in the electronic design field, and I kind of got them over the barrel in that respect, so I have a comfortable position where I'm at and no real problems with being able to do what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you get into some other area where I don't have as much control over what's going on or my source of income, and I would probably feel a little uneasy about that. But again, it would be a matter of what kind of bucks were there and how stable it was. But again, I didn't do this for an exhibitionary kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't care what you or anybody else thinks about what I've had to do to be comfortable with myself. It's something I had to do for me.
Right. But at the same time, you do go to a fair number of tattoo conventions, and you know, you must experience a, you know, at least a minor celebrity status while you're there.
Well, in fact, I've only been to a couple of conventions.
I guess it's just everyone you go to, they always will photo you.
Right, and my picture's been plastered all over the place, and it, in a way, it kind of irritates me because these people are making money off something I've spent a great deal of time doing. I haven't gotten a dime out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're basically using my picture to make themselves famous, mm-hmm. or to get publicized.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I did this for me, not for other people.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that it's, I think personally that it's good that, you know, the more photos like that that are out there, the better, because it changes the public's opinion and the way that they react to this sort of thing.
Well, that's true, and that's the upside of it, because now I've had a fair amount of people tell me that I was the first person to really go as far as I did, and in fact, I was featured in the first episode or first issue of In the Wind, a full-page thing, and since then, there's been a lot more facial tattooing hit the mainstream, and a lot more other things hit the mainstream. And a lot of it really is, if there are people that are willing to do it or can get by doing it or are motivated enough that they have to do it, it at least shows other people that you can do what you need to do and still get by.
Mm-hmm. As much as you've talked to other people that you know, have facial tattooing, do you think there's a unifying thread that... that runs through you all?
I'm not certain about that, other than the need or the desire that it has, that it's something they have to do.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that that, I mean, you said that you were in a lot rougher shape before you did it, and there's an awful lot of people who haven't done it that are in pretty rough shape. Do you think that this is a desire that is in a lot more people than are actually doing it?
Oh, yeah, but they're... there are so many people out there. In fact, you had an article on your website about a guy that got some facial tattooing done, and it was done poorly, and he was forced by his mother to remove it and said he's going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So even after a bad experience, there are certain people that these things are compelling, and they have to do them, and... you know, even for somebody to come up and go, why did you do that or whatever, it's like, you know, it really doesn't matter. If somebody needs to do that to complete something in themselves, the reasoning, I can understand, I guess, why some people are curious about it, but I don't really see why it matters, you know? It's
mm-hmm. Now, the I think the only mod that we haven't mentioned so far is you've grown your fingernails as well.
Yeah.
And those are real?
Yep.
Have you thickened them as well, or are they just, they're just grown and lengthened?
Yeah, they, in order to keep them, arced at, like a cat claw, and mm-hmm. to keep them from breaking, they have acrylic over them as well, but the whole thing is my, my nail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, rebuilding your nose. Do you have other, other future modification plans?
Primarily the silicone injection presently, mm-hmm. If I can find a source for some kind of permanent injectable material, whether it's silicone or some dermablend I've heard about, or some permanent form of collagen, I really don't care what kind of substance it is, as long as it's permanent and will stay where it's put at.
Mm-hmm. What and, about non-facial ones?
What's that?
Non-facial modifications.
I haven't really thought about that. Yet, my primary concern right now is the getting the cat completed, and once I get that done, then I'll go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've thought about is possibly clawed feet, if I can find somebody who can come up with a way to do cat claws on my feet.
And build you some cat boots so you can walk.
Yeah, well, that would work too.
Well, I mean, something, you know, some shoes that your claws will fit into.
Right.
I guess you wear sandals, you're in the... You're pretty far south.
Yeah, I'm in Southern California. I can get by with that, but you can't wear sandals all the time, not up where I hunt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have no intent of building a tail, though?
Yeah, very much.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's going to be in the future. It's a little bit trickier modification.
Well, I've actually asked some questions along that line, and it doesn't sound very hopeful as far as...
blood supply?
What's that?
Blood supply and things like that.
Yeah, well, getting some form of articulation. But the other thing is I am in the electronics field. I just haven't had time to devote to that concept. But the animatronics company, who does an awful lot of various models and modeling appendages or various parts for particular applications, I've thought along the lines of designing something like that that would fully articulate, that could be controlled by other motions. But haven't had much time to devote to that. I'd really rather have a real tail, but unless somebody comes up with a means to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And since, like I say, most mainstream medicine, if it's not, doesn't fit 99% of the status quo, forget it.
Well, they're certainly not going to invest $1 million developing a tail.
Exactly. Or even spend a dollar or an hour worth of time on it, for that matter.
Without a doubt, yeah. But I guess what I wanted to ask, too, is why is it that most of your efforts have been concentrated in the face?
Only because that part is what I have to do right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean what you have to do spiritually, or?
Yeah, something I have to do, like, psychologically, spiritually, physically. That is, like, the first step I have to deal with, and that's mm-hmm. really all I've concentrated on, because it's just gotten to a point that unless I can get this done, I can't go beyond this, so I've concentrated all my effort on doing my face.
What will happen when the transformation's complete?
Then I guess I'll be done.
And then you, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of your, you know, a lot of your efforts, you know, over the last 25 years have been concentrated on achieving this goal. You know, will it be strange not having to worry about that anymore?
No. In fact, well, once I get to that point and I have exhausted any other things that I can come up with the money to do that can be done, I'm certainly not going to stop with my face if there is a possibility of a tail or clawed feet or going further with it. But at present, I really haven't been able to get time to any of the other possibilities, because finishing off what I've started on my face alone has taken 25 years to even find somebody who could do it and capable of doing it. And I've spent 3 years alone trying to locate injectable silicone or some other form of injectable material with absolutely no possibility of finding a source, and I know it's there. Even if I know what particular grade of silicone is used or qualifies as being injectable, I know where I can buy this stuff. I mean, I know it's there, I just don't know what I need. And I've spent 3 years on that alone. So this whole thing is like, presently the most important thing is to locate that material to take the next step, and I've spent over 3 years on that alone. So everything seems to be a constant barrier, even though I have somebody that can do what I need done. So as far as worrying about what the next step's going to be or when I'm going to take that or what I'm going to do when I'm done, right now I have a great deal ahead of me just locating this one lousy material that I know is out there by the truckload.
It's true. All right, I'm going to play another song. When we come back, I want to ask Kat a bit about how the cat, you know, affects the rest of his life, whether the cat is just visual or whether their behavioral changes as well. Anyway, this is some live Mercury Rev. This is them doing a Bob Dylan cover.
Was a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine. Every time I think about him, Lord, I just can't keep from crying. And he was a friend of mine. He died on the road. Died on the road. He never had enough money to pay his room or board. And he was a friend of mine. I stole away and cried. I stole away and cried. 'Cause I never had too much money, and I never been satisfied. And he was a friend of mine. Just can't keep from crying, 'cause he was a friend of mine.
Kat, like I said, I wanted to ask you, it's fairly obvious to everybody what the visual transformation is, but are there other behavioral changes as well?
Yeah, there are to quite a bit of extent. First of all, when I finally realized without question that I was the cat and the cat was my totem, and that rather than fighting it like I had for some time and going under the influence that, like, when I'd initially meet somebody, that this person was going to either screw me over or would ultimately mean harm to me, this empathy kind of thing that went beyond actual reasoning were true things that when I realized that I do feel these things and react to certain things in different ways, that they are part of who I am. And now that I no longer deny these feelings or these empathic contacts, that they are real and not just something weird that's going on, that it's been a lot easier to deal with a lot of different situations.
Mm-hmm. Now, this might be I might be asking this question in a stupid way, but there are, you know, a cat has a certain way of behaving. Because it's a cat, do you behave in those ways as well, or are you a human with sort of a cat influence, or what's the best way to describe it?
The way I react to things is more natural cat than anything else. Just like different cats have different personalities, it's all unique to who I am and what I am. But yeah, there's no question that the way I react to things are very cat-like.
Mm-hmm. And now you go by Cat. If I remember right, your email address used to be Lynx, and your email address is now Tiger.
I changed servers, so I had to change change names.
So what I'm wondering is it a general sort of feline affinity, or do you feel more towards a certain type of cat?
Well, when I chose to start changing into a cat, I chose a tiger, and The reason for that is that the tiger is the largest cat on this continent. We have to go back several years to the saber-toothed tiger, but and has always been the largest cat ever on this continent, and that's what my contact was closest with. But it's really not, my choice is the tiger, but it's not really any specific cat. My empathy and my connection with all cats, whether it's small domestic cats or larger cats, is actually, in fact, stronger with the larger cats than it is with the smaller cats. I've had friends with big cats. I have had several encounters with big cats when I'm out hunting. I live in Southern California up in the mountains, and a lot of the cats hunt in the same area that I hunt, and I've come across many of them, and we have a very close bond. In fact, a couple years ago, when I was up bow hunting deer, I got within like 10 feet of a bobcat, and he just kind of turned around and looked at me and walked off. And I've been within 25 feet of a mountain lion, and no aggression, no real problems, just like mutual respect. And when I realized I was in his hunting territory, I have respect for that, and I went over and hunted just outside of his area, mm-hmm. which is about 5 miles from where he was at.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you you bow hunt rather than using a gun.
Yeah, well, my people have always bow hunted, and I prefer being close to my targets.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself is part of the cat thing, that if you can't stock up on it close enough to complete your task, you're not good enough to be out there hunting something. Anybody that can make a 1,000-yard shot at a deer is unquestionably a good shot, but it doesn't take that much to be that good a shot. And shooting a deer when they don't even know you're in the same county is not really much of a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And I think also it it separates people from the experience of hunting, and they're not, you know, it. I don't think they're really aware of the relationship they have with the animal.
The whole thing is that when you're bow hunting, you have to become the hunter. You have to become the cat. I can tell when I'm in an area that the prey has recently gone through, and then find the signs to prove it. It's a matter of getting close to what you're doing, getting a connection, a metaphysical kind of connection to your purpose for being in the woods for the hunt, and a connection with your animal spirit and who you are, who they are, and your prey.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to, I'll move away from that and ask you, you said that your job accepts you basically because they have to, because you're good at what you do. What's the average day in your life like when you get up? You presumably have to interact with normal untattooed society.
Well, for the most part, I really don't. Not unless I really have to. Basically, I have never had much of a need for other people, even though I do interact with various tribal members, and I got to go into town and do my shopping and all that kind of crap. But people in general, I have no real need for. And some people have good reactions to me, some people don't have good reactions, and I'm pretty empathetic about the whole thing. You know, it doesn't matter to me one way or another. Mm-hmm. Some people have a problem and react very poorly or even somewhat violently to who and what I am. Other people are repulsed by it, and the thing is the people that react that way usually keep their distance away from me, and I don't have to keep my distance from them, so it's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is that this is something I had to do, and you don't have to understand it, you don't have to accept it. I really don't care, you know.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the more memorable reactions that you've had?
I don't know. I've gotten both good and bad ones, and like I said, not kind of thing that's really up on my agenda to pay much attention to what other people do, because I have something I have to do when I'm out where other people are at, and just kind of do what I got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if people react poorly to it and get upset about it and all that, it's, it doesn't affect me at all.
Right. It's their problem, not yours, I guess.
Exactly.
Now, I'll ask you about another thing about other people doing something. Do you think that there should be more animal people out there? Would you like to see others following a similar path?
Actually, there are some. There's group that you have, or that you referred me to, the people with the Furry Project that
in Belgium.
Are working on being transformed to various animals. And one of them's in Belgium, and the other one's in England, and I believe one is working on becoming a fox. I haven't met any of these people, but the thing is that this is not something that I chose to do and am unique in what I'm doing. This is something that's part of my heritage, that is something I had to do, and other people in other countries have the same needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like something unusual per se, that like I'm the only one. It's maybe not be a mainstream thing that even a given percentage of the population are, but it's not an isolated kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. How has the Native American community responded to you?
A fair amount of them respond poorly. Other ones accept it. I, in fact, actually had a guy, my chief runs a concession periodically. He sells jewelry, traditional jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
And he was set up at a stand up the road a little ways in another town just east of where I'm at. And this guy came up to him. I came down there to see how he was doing and kind of break the monotony for him. And this guy walks up to him and asks him if I was Huron. Flea was kind of blown away by it and said yes, and he told me about it later, and I said, well, how did he know I was Huron? And it turns out this guy's a professor of Native American studies and is familiar with my traditions, that we, going back several generations, this was a fairly common thing. Anymore, it's not very much done. And so much of it really, I guess, comes down to the status quo kind of thing, and what would be generally considered acceptable by mainstream people. And it's like, if it's something you have to do, if it's part of your heritage or whatever, why should you let the rest of the world dictate what's right for you?
Mm-hmm. As much as you can say, do you think that in the past that... That people with your same tribal background would have gone as far as you've gone? Admittedly, they wouldn't have had some of the surgical options, but certainly the tattooing.
Actually, some of the surgical changes were, in fact, used some years ago, not near as refined as what things can be today, but the thing is modern surgery and modern medicine has its base in very, very old Native American traditions.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back a very long way, and so many things like new medicine and things that are accredited to whoever discovered the various elements goes back to traditional medicine that goes back before the beginning of time.
That's true.
But like the guy who discovered he could extract anisosalicylic acid from white willow bark was the inventor of aspirin. Well, white willow bark boiled in water has been used for a general remedy for hundreds of thousands of years. It was no great big new discovery. Putting it in pill form perhaps was, but the discovery itself was nothing new.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just remembered we forgot to talk about one of your modifications, which is your implants.
Yes, there's been a piece put in the bridge of my nose to more even out the bridge of my nose to give it a more cat profile, and some pieces put in my eyebrows to more accentuate the cat look, the skull shape.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned these. They were a little bit more subtle than you'd hoped. Are you going to increase their size?
I'm not sure. I have to. It's not fully healed yet, so I really can't see what the shape is that much. Other than it did seem to change the shape. The bottom line is that it's. It is a subtle change, but it's not so much that it's so subtle. I think what the real thing is that it looks so natural that it's not so much noticed.
Mm-hmm. So maybe
so
it was done perfectly.
I haven't decided there if any more is going to be necessary or not. Mm-hmm. It's too early to tell there.
Mm-hmm. Now, animal transformations are in the West largely unknown. Except for maybe in the Middle Ages, I guess, bouts of lycanthropy and werewolfism. Do you think that that is maybe the West's inept way of expressing these desires?
That's hard to say. The thing is that if you take various legends of that nature, first of all, a lot of the written history or what's considered history is incorrect because it was written by people who could read and write. My people don't have a written language by nature. In fact, I speak English. English is a foreign language. It was brought to America by the English.
Mm-hmm.
But so many of these legends have been misinterpreted, and a lot of them, if you were to go back to the native peoples, whether they're from Europe, England, some of the Wiccans, that a lot of, there are many people around this world that have very close connection to the animals, and a lot of those people, the connection is close enough that it has to be more than just having something carved in the shape of that animal, or having something, a representation of that animal on a shield, or a fetish carved of the animal, or something of that nature. It depends on how close people's connections to the animals are. The things that my people learned as a people going back into the Stone Age are things that were taught to us by the animals. And many of us, our connections to the animals are closer than our connections to the people.
Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time. I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you about is... whether there is a cat girl or you're looking for a cat girl.
I've actually been told that there is one here in the county somewhere, but I don't know anything about her other than I've heard of her from a couple people. But not, like I say, I've heard of one, but I haven't seen her.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm asking is if a viewer is, inspired by you on a romantic level, should they contact you?
Oh, it's possible, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, in a perfect world, would you like? Would you rather meet a cat girl or a normal girl?
A cat by far.
Mm-hmm. And if someone is a cat, do you think they'll know, or who really hasn't been brought up with any of these traditions? Do you think they could, go through their life not really even being aware that they're a cat?
I suppose it's possible, but the thing is that this kind of bond goes so deep that it's very difficult to deny, and to not completely know at least that you have some kind of bond with a given animal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people out there that prefer dogs over cats. There are people out there that are very close to various equines, horses or other animals. Everybody has a animal of preference, and that in itself has to do with your totems and who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm. The thing is,
so often mainstream white society or other societies are so ingrained into the technological aspects of things. I mean, I'm an electronics computer tech, but I'm a Native American, and I have a connection to these things. So many people in mainstream will just deny it and not allow themselves to understand what these desires are about.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll ask you then is, someone who is feeling these desires and this need to transform themselves, what advice would you give them before they undertake it?
Just to research it, to make sure that they're going to find somebody that has the ability to do what they want to do before they start.
Mm-hmm.
The real only problem here is that I wasn't able to find somebody to do what I wanted to do. It's taken 25 years, and I had to do other things in the meantime to at least make some progress along those directions. The hardest thing for me to deal with is the amount of time it's taken to find somebody to do it, and then the amount of time it takes to do it, and the amount of time it takes me to save up the money to do it, and it's all these delays. I finally found somebody that's capable of doing most of what I want to do. I'm sure its tail is still out of the question and some other things that I want to do, but even the things that are possible to do, I'm looking at, if I'm lucky, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, if the money permits, in time alone to get things done, providing I can find some of the materials necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So finding somebody that is capable and willing to do what needs to be done and has the assets and the abilities to do it, and to kind of have some idea what that person's motivations are, to have the same perception and the same goal in mind that the person that's going to have it done has.
Mm-hmm.
Because the effect that you will get and the bottom line, the end result will be better.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I did have one last thing that I had forgotten as well. Now, you mentioned you're a medicine man earlier. Do you see yourself going down that road someday?
That is the road that was laid before me, and that is some of the training that that I was given. And the thing is, the term medicine man has been, like, really blown out of proportion. What it really is keepers of the traditions, and it's my responsibility to do what I can to help people along those lines, because that was my training. But then also I missed out on a lot of my training by joining the Navy and spending a lot of years drinking and drugging. But the thing is that many of the things that I was taught when I was young, I had no idea what I was taught at that time. And I am only now starting to realize many things that I was taught then.
Mm-hmm. And tattooing is at this point largely a white thing. Do you feel that?
How do you say that? It goes back. To,
oh no! I agree that it goes way back in almost every culture. But I mean, nowadays it seems to be largely being done by white kids.
Well, that's true too. In fact, I heard something said on the radio a while ago that this new fad of tattooing and piercing and all of these things, goes back about 10,000 years, I suppose. Geologically, that's pretty new, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, it's true. If we're rock formations, it's a new thing. What I meant was, do you feel that, you were saying you were a Native American youth that sort of left that path and really only came back to it later in life. Do you think that's a bad thing, or would you like to see some of these things being pushed back into modern Native culture?
I don't understand quite what you're asking there.
I think that not just Native Americans, but groups all over the world sort of have this westernization drilled into them that steals away a lot of their culture. Do you think that it would be good if a lot more Native American kids were actively involved in body modification of various sorts?
Well, the thing is that any of these things are very personal things, and if you're not drawn to something, or if you're, let's say if you are drawn to something, it is something you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the kind of thing that you force somebody to do, or that should be, like, impressed upon them just because of they're part of a given group. But if it is something that you're drawn to, there's a reason for it, and there's a reasoning behind it. And, to hell with whatever mainstream culture or whatever is going to think about it. If it's something you have to do, there's a reason you have to do it. And if you're going to deny it and fight it, it's not likely to be good for you in the long run.
Mm-hmm. All right,
at least it wasn't in my case.
Yeah. All right. Like I said, we're out of time. I feel like there's a lot of questions that I've, you know, not had the sense to ask. But my eyes are certainly a lot more open than they were at the start of this interview. I hope everyone else's are too. And everyone tune in next week for hopefully we'll be interviewing Steve Howarth, who did Cat's Modifications next week. And we're taking you out with some Devo. And thank you very much for being with us, Cat.
All right. Thank you.
They tell us that we lost our tail, evolving up from little snail. I say it's all just wind and sail. Are we not men? We are Devo. Whoa. Heads now.